It's the Burt Cohen Show. Sometimes dreams can become reality if we work together and make it so. For example, the change with regard to marriage equality, hasn't that been like lightning speed, the change that suddenly same-sex marriage is no big deal? Well, for many, many years, decades, really since President Nixon started the war on drugs, there has been prohibition against marijuana. Okay, it's been nuts. It's caused a lot of damage. We may be at the beginning of the end of marijuana prohibition. Could happen. There's some signs. Our guest today, we're going to talk about that. Our guest is Anthony Gregory, a research editor at the Independent Institute. Thanks for being with us, Anthony.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
Well, let me tell our listeners a little bit about who you are. Anthony Gregory is currently writing a book on individual liberty and the writ of habeas corpus. We could talk about that all day. He's written hundreds of articles that have appeared in the Christian Science Monitor, Bloomberg, Business Week, San Diego Union Tribune, Washington Times. Ooh, that's an interesting paper. Dallas Morning News, bunch of other papers around the country, as well as Human Events, Counterpunch, and the American Conservative, as well as Alternet. Well, again, thanks for being with us, Anthony Gregory. The war on drugs has cost us billions of dollars and destroyed hundreds of thousands of lives. Just recently here, where the show is coming from in the little town of Greenland, was a horrible episode in the war on drugs. One police chief just about to retire was killed, four others wounded. Terrible. Terrible. And for what? Now, that wasn't about marijuana, but it was about the war on drugs. And George W. Bush said in his 2000 presidential campaign that in a state's rights, he would stop the raids. Instead, President Bush ramped them up, the raids on marijuana. Oh, President Obama's promised to stop them. And then what did he do? He escalated the raids even further. Since October 2009, the Obama administration has executed over 170 SWAT raids of legal marijuana dispensaries. Oaksterdam University in Oakland, California was raided by the DEA, the IRS, and U.S. Marshals. I guess they all need work. This was providing training to the medical cannabis industry. It was fully compliant with state and local law. President Obama promised at the beginning of his administration to respect state medical marijuana laws. He has broken this promise time and time again. Well, Anthony Gregory, we've been at this a long time. The logic has been there a long time to end prohibition. What makes you think that we may, in fact, be at the beginning of the end of marijuana prohibition?
Well, the biggest reason is public opinion. All government actions and all political systems ultimately rely on the acquiescence of the people. And for the first time, we're having national polls indicating a majority of Americans want to see marijuana treated like alcohol or tobacco, decriminalized. This is a welcome trend. Until the people support legalizing it, there's very little hope, because there's so many reasons that the government and its own, the logic behind the bureaucracy and the law enforcement system and even foreign policy, that they all have a stake in perpetuating the drug war. So not until there's a huge public wave of discontent and opposition to the drug war do I think the thing will end. And now we're finally seeing that very important prerequisite.
Well, what has brought about that change? Why is it that there's so much more public awareness? Is it because of the obvious helpful medical uses of marijuana? Or what do you sense, Anthony? What has brought about this change? And a second part of the question is, are people willing to speak up about this?
Well, I would say the change has largely been the result of cultural change. People are just more tolerant of it. When marijuana was first prohibited in the 1930s, there was a lot of hysteria about blacks and Hispanics. There was a lot of racism behind most of the drug war. And actually, there was a period in the 70s when attitudes toward the drug war seemed to liberalize a bit, but that was all reversed by the Ronald Reagan Just Say No crusade. There was, if you look at polls in the earlier 80s, Americans were not that concerned with illicit drugs as a problem in society. But thanks to the propaganda campaign of the Reagan-Bush years, by the end, Americans were far, far more concerned. But what's become clear since then is that the costs of prohibition are just completely unreasonable. We have, with marijuana, something like 1 million arrests a year. We have the vast violations of civil liberties. People seeing peaceful, innocent, young people mostly, and minorities mostly, but no one is safe from the drug war. People being hauled off jail to prison for long periods of time. We see the violent crime that arises because of the drug war. We see the Mexican drug cartel crime right along the border, which is purely a consequence of the war on drugs. With marijuana, about 60% of their profits are just from marijuana. So you see all of these costs, and people know that with marijuana especially, that the drug is just not nearly as dangerous as it used to be portrayed as being. I mean, in the reefer madness propaganda of the 30s, of course, the idea was it would make people crazy, it would turn them into violent rapists, it would make them completely unable to do any work, but it would also turn them into rapacious monsters who would commit violent crime. This is clearly not the truth.
Yeah,
we've had three presidents in a row who almost everyone is sure have done marijuana. Mm-hmm. And although I do consider all three of those presidents to be criminals, I don't think the marijuana is to blame. But we also see people like Michael Phelps. We see all these people that are obviously accomplished who've tried it. So the attitude about pot has changed, and the recognition of the horrors of the drug war have become clearer.
Yeah, maybe people are seeing and can't look away from is what's different. It used to be, I think, that the drug war, oh, it doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect my community. What the heck do I care? You know, I'm worried about drugs. I want to keep kids off drugs. I want to keep them productive and focused on school. But it's become so pervasive, I think. I mean, here in Seacoast, New Hampshire, that raid in Greenland, the little town of Greenland, it was so unnecessary. This guy was about to retire. So maybe it's because people are seeing the effects more and more. And you mentioned about Ronald Reagan and the crusade. That, I think, is a key word, I'm guessing, that there's something about a crusade where you can't question a crusade. How dare you question this kind of holy war? And people went along with that for a very long time. I think you're right, having been around in the late 70s and early 80s, and then when Ronald Reagan came in, there was starting to be some movement on marijuana and recognizing the reality of it there. But whatever, I wonder, the logic has been impeccable for years and years and years. Politicians, Ronald Reagan, Tip O'Neill, when he was Speaker of the House, he helped launch, he was a good liberal Democrat, he helped launch the war on drugs. Politicians have never wanted to make a change on that. They've always been intensely afraid to look soft on crime. Isn't that still the case? I mean, the people may want change, but, you know, oftentimes there was the president, President Obama, opened up suggestions for what people wanted, and the White House was swamped. The number one issue was legalization of marijuana. He just ignored it. What makes you think politicians are any more likely now to be less afraid to look soft on crime and listen on this?
Well, I actually think that the politicians are a lagging indicator. I mean, Obama spoke openly about liberalizing drug laws, about treating things less as a criminal justice issue and more as a health concern in his last campaign. And he was not, of all the things that conservatives attacked him over, this was not really a big one. In fact, in his, you know, in his autobiography where he talks openly about doing drugs, although some have attacked him over this, this was at the bottom of the list of concerns people had. I think that public opinion, if you look at just questions over is the drug war a failure, everyone thinks it's a failure. It's like 10% or so think it's working. Everyone knows it's a failure. And so the politicians, if anything, are they're not afraid. It's not that they're afraid to speak out for legalizing pot or for bringing some sanity to the issue. Their balancing act is between what the public wants, which is a little bit more reasonable than what we have, and what the state, what the government's interests are. The government has an interest in perpetuating the drug war. Marijuana, it makes the whole federal drug war possible by because they could point to the number of Americans who use illicit drugs and see how shockingly high a number it is. Well, if marijuana were legal, that number would diminish by quite a bit, and the drug war itself would lose a bunch of its rationale. You know, we have vast interest groups that benefit from the drug war. We have the entire prison system, the police lobbies, the prosecutors. We have all of the businesses that work with the government to produce military machinery for waging the drug war. We have the pharmaceutical industry, the alcohol industry, and the cigarette industry, all of which see marijuana and other drugs as potential competition. There's a huge reason that the government, and also just for the sake of maintaining its own power, when the Supreme Court in 2005 upheld the federal crackdowns on California's medical marijuana, they did so on the grounds that you can't question federal power on the basis of the Constitution, because a lot of these, even liberals, they see the drug war as not to be questioned, because to question it questions the very premises of an all-powerful state. So the real battle is between the forces of omnipotent government and the forces of individual liberty. And so the reason that politicians don't come out in favor of liberalizing drug war, I think, has less to do with the public and more to do with their own interests.
So with their own interests and I don't know how many thousands of jobs in the government bureaucracy, thousands of police officers, the DEA, as you mentioned, the prison industry, they might be put out of work. The pharmaceutical industry, I'm guessing, too, the paper industry and the cotton industry, because hemp, which isn't even legal anymore. I mean, that cannot get anybody high, period. And yet, because it's related to marijuana, but the paper industry would have competition. The cotton industry would have competition from hemp. So they're probably against it. But do you have any evidence about the pharmaceutical industry? Because, I mean, medical marijuana is a big deal happening across the country. In fact, there was just a couple of weeks ago in the New York Times, very powerful piece, if I can just read a little bit of it from a judge. Let's see, his name is Gustin Reichbach, Justice of the State Supreme Court in Brooklyn, New York. He said, and this was in the New York Times, he's a cancer patient, he said, this is not a law and order issue, it's a medical and human rights issue. He said, this is, as compared to other drugs that the pharmaceuticals make lots of money on, this is one drug that gives relief without deleterious side effects, yet it remains classified as a narcotic with no medicinal value. He ends his piece by saying it is barbaric to deny us access to one substance that has proved to ameliorate our suffering. And that, I mean, that is so well known that marijuana absolutely does have medical purposes. I can tell you, I personally was treated for hepatitis C, and the treatment for that is exceedingly difficult to go through. And the doctors, all the medical people know that, yeah, marijuana can help you get through it and get cured. And yet they can't do it. They can't prescribe it. So I wonder how much of it the pharmaceutical, do you have any evidence or even anecdotal stories about the pharmaceutical industry and not wanting the competition for their much more expensive products?
Well, from the beginning, the big pharmaceutical companies were behind all of the federal drug regulations. I mean, they supported the 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act under Teddy Roosevelt. They supported Woodrow Wilson's Harrison Narcotic Act in 1914, and they supported the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, which was part of the New Deal. They supported all of the controls because, as most big businesses do, they support federal regulation of their industry because they're always going to have more influence over how those regulations are enacted and enforced than are the competition. Today, I believe that the pharmaceutical company is often behind some of the lobbying against, when there's these drug, sometimes there's these referendum on drug questions.
Uh-huh.
And you see some pharmaceutical interests backing it. And my belief is it's fairly extensive. But offhand, I don't have numbers or names.
Well, I'm sure.
On this tendency. I'd urge your listeners to look it up. I'm almost certain that this is an ongoing dynamic, but I don't want to mislead and
sure.
claim that I have the evidence that I don't.
Well, I can tell you, I knew a guy who had a very bad form of cancer, and his prescription was $1,500 a month, and it made him sick. He couldn't take it. It made him so sick. But for $50 a month of medical marijuana, he felt fine. He can continue to get the treatment he needed. We are talking on the Burt Cohen Show with Anthony Gregory, research editor at the Independent Institute. What is the Independent Institute?
The Independent Institute is a nonpartisan public policy research organization in the Bay Area, California. We do studies on a wide range of policy issues, and as well as kind of more general and deeper questions of political philosophy and economics and history, but a shorthand would be to say we're a think tank.
Uh-huh.
And we analyze pretty much all foreign and domestic policy issues.
Well, thinking—that's dangerous. There's a lot of people who don't want to teach critical thinking in our schools anymore. and you talked about the power of centralized government, concentrated power. Ron Paul, he had a lot of appeal specifically on this issue. And it seems to me, if you look at what the word conservative means, it means more local control over things. People in a democratic republic having some ability to make policy and govern ourselves. And that's one of the things he spoke on. How big do you think the marijuana thing, I mean, he was the only guy, serious guy running for president, it was Gary Johnson, but major candidate talking, he was the only one with the cojones, shall we say, to talk about marijuana legalization. And he actually worked with somebody on the left, my old friend Barney Frank. They put in some legislation to, I believe it was, to end the federal prohibition on marijuana. It hasn't passed this year, but it will continue to keep building up support. Now, I did want to ask, too, I mean, like all drugs, like anything, isn't it possible to overdo it? I mean, I want to ask, is marijuana completely benign? Is it not without potential negative side effects? The images of people vegging out, just sitting there watching TV or playing video games, and their productivity affected. Don't we need to control these poor habits?
Well, nothing is totally benign, and without being too trite about it, I think marijuana, like all substances, has potential downsides. I would say it's more benign than virtually any other drug that one can think of, certainly any recreational drug, including alcohol and tobacco. People do sometimes lose motivation, just as they do with other activities that can be distracting from what we might judge to be more important priorities in life. But the place of government is not to make people virtuous or to make people use their time wisely. It's inimical to the principles of liberty and human decency for the state to use legal violence, jails, and guns to control people in what they peacefully do on their own property. And so there are reasons that social institutions might want to keep certain drug abuse in check with drugs that are currently illegal as well as drugs that are currently legal. But the solution to marijuana abuse is not the state any more than the solution to alcoholism is the state.
Right. Well, we saw that, and we could see tremendous evidence of the damage that alcohol causes. And when prohibition against alcohol, which everybody now recognizes was completely foolish and just incredibly bloody for no good reason at all. But there is a, I don't know about causal, but a circumstantial connection between alcohol and, say, violence against women. I mean, and here the state did, it could be argued, had an interest in protecting women from abuses of alcohol, and yet it didn't work. I mean, drunk driving is horrible. But what do we see now? Education. Education has worked. It used to be, when I grew up in the 50s, it was funny to see people drunk driving. That's how it was portrayed. It's not portrayed that way anymore. Yes, there's enforcement. That's a big factor. But there's also education. People realize, hey, alcohol isn't necessarily bad. Like anything, it can be abused. And I imagine it could be done that way with marijuana, you know, in an education campaign. Anthony Gregory, wouldn't you be concerned? I mean, the message to children, that's what people have said to me about, you know, what if it is legalized? People are even concerned about medical marijuana. Don't you think the use of marijuana would spike up, that if the prohibition, the war on marijuana ended, wouldn't use become more pervasive if it becomes legal? What do we know about this concern?
Well, I don't know. I would think that it might become a little more pervasive, at least at first, as people became interested in the recently legalized product.
Right.
I think even if use became more pervasive, that would not justify the drug war. I mean, what it means for the government to prohibit marijuana is far worse than the prospect of more people using marijuana. As for sending the wrong message to children and to the youth, I don't think it's the role of the state to set to determine what morality is. And if it is, the drug war sends the wrong message to children. It sends a message that people who've never lifted, who've never threatened anyone else, who've never hurt anyone else, belong in jail. It sends a message that people's property can be freely searched by government authorities in a society that claims itself to be free. Mm. It sends the message that 50,000 people dying near the Mexican border over a period of a couple of years is an acceptable price to pay to keep drugs out of the hands of people when drugs are not being kept out of the hands of people anyway. It's the drug war that sends perverse messages. And I really wish people would stop looking at government to send a moral message, because the government, in virtually everything it does, flouts traditional morality. I mean, this is the institution that kills children with drones. This is the institution that confiscates our wealth more than all the private criminals combined by an order of magnitude, and then shovels the money to people on Wall Street who contributed to the financial collapse.
Yeah.
I mean, the state is not the moral arbiter. The state claims itself to be the legal arbiter, and it obviously is corrupt in its decision-making. But if people want role models, they shouldn't look to Obama or Bush or Clinton or Bush or Reagan. These people are not who I would want children to look at as role models. And the drug war being as hypocritical as it
yes,
is,
yes.
teaching children, well, if you're president one day, it's okay that you did drugs. You can still put people in cages for doing drugs. You can still poison crops in foreign countries to stop drugs. You can still finance murderous regimes abroad that crack down on drugs. That's the real immoral lesson being taught with respect to drugs in our time. The idea that someone peacefully using smoking a plant is not being hauled off and having his life ruined by the government, I think that we can handle that vice. It'd be infinitely preferable to the wholesale violence against civic morality that's being conducted in the name of drug prohibition.
And there are an awful lot of, I'm from the boomer generation, and there are an awful lot of us who would like to and have to sneak around, but are concerned for our, for families that, you know, because of the war on drugs, can't do it. You know, and it's hard. I can't see the harm, you know, if you're just, you know, watching a movie and sitting at home and doing nothing, you know, maybe eating too much because you get the munchies, whatever. But I don't exactly think the government has a role in that. And we've seen over and over again where the government seeks to be the moral arbiter. And, you know, we have countries like that, Iran, you know, which has a religious state which foists its morality on everybody, whether they like it or not. But I'm sensing that there really is a change in attitude. And that's what we're talking about on The Burt Cohen Show. Our guest today is Anthony Gregory. And Anthony, you say right now, 3/4 of Americans, including 2/3 of Republicans, want the federal raids against state legalized medical marijuana dispensaries to end. What's your source on that?
That's a Mason-Dixon poll that was cited in an article in Raw Story. I linked to in my article.
Yeah.
And that doesn't surprise me much. I don't think anybody, I think that people have really soured on the medical marijuana raids. They see their local governments legalizing an activity and regulating it. And then they see these federal officials come in wearing jackboots, and bulletproof vests, you know, breaking down the door, looting these businesses for all they have.
Yeah.
It's hauling sick people away to jail. It's not very popular anymore, thank goodness.
I was just going to say, what do you think about organizations such as LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition? These are officers. I've been real impressed with what they do. Law enforcement officers who have been on the front lines of the drug war. They've seen their buddies get killed in the drug war, and they've seen what it does. And I have to think that the LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, is connecting with people that, you know, we're talking about, is this the beginning of the end of marijuana prohibition? What do you think about LEAP and their effect on public perception?
Well, it certainly enhances the credibility of the pot and drug reform movement to have law enforcement advocate for liberalizing the laws. I think anyone who's half reasonable in law enforcement should see the problems, the human rights problems with the drug war. Although, of course, there are many in the law enforcement community who are okay with those consequences because it expands power for the state. If I could back up briefly,
want
to say one thing that makes me more pessimistic is, although Americans are souring on marijuana prohibition, there's a lot of connected areas of public policy where we're going in the wrong direction. The fact that they're thinking in New York City of prohibiting large sodas from being bought in restaurants indicates that there's just this puritanical, busybody mentality that it's okay for the state to control what people buy and ingest. And although I think that soda with sugar is arguably even less healthy than marijuana, the idea that people shouldn't be allowed to buy soda in whatever quantity they want, I find very offensive. We're moving toward increasing controls in general. And with the state coming to control more and more aspects of healthcare, I think the drug war could become intensified on the basis that Americans are not responsible for their own health, therefore they shouldn't be free to control their own bodies. So while I'm encouraged by Americans becoming less and less in favor of marijuana prohibition, the logic surrounding marijuana prohibition, the essential premises behind the drug war, are premises that most Americans not only accept, but at times seem to be accepting increasingly.
I wonder, you know, oftentimes, you know, just because a majority feels one way doesn't necessarily mean that the will of the people will be enacted on by our government. You know, there have been so many cases where the people felt one way, a majority of the people felt one way, but the government, the elected officials, the bureaucrats are afraid to do anything about it. I mean, okay, we have 3/4 of Americans and 2/3 of Republicans who want to stop federal raids against medical marijuana. My sense is, I don't see a lot of politicians, people who actually have their hands on the controls of power, doing anything about it.
Well, of course not.
There's one exception, though, but go ahead.
Well, of course they don't. I mean, the state is not, you know, the great lie of modern democracy is that the state is somehow a reflection of the people's will. It's true that in modern democracies, as in all governments, if the people are vehemently opposed to something or vehemently in favor of something, that is the tendency of policy to follow, because the state cannot get away with policies that are at complete odds with the cultural predilections. But the problem is, most people might sour on the drug war, but how vehemently do they oppose it?
Right.
I mean,
see
now the American people are vehemently against this war in Afghanistan, which is going to persist 2 more years, to say nothing of the agreement Obama signed a few weeks ago, committing U.S. troops to be stationed in Afghanistan through 2024.
Right. That's not what the people want, right?
Right. But the problem is, most people don't want that particular war.
Absolutely.
But most of the people who don't want it are Obama supporters or not, you know, Republicans. And most of the conservatives who oppose Obama are not as adamant about opposing war as they are opposing Obama. And so the political dynamic perversely creates a situation where, although most Americans might not be thrilled about a war, there's not really any opposition. Because what are people going to do who don't? What are civil libertarians going to do if their method of giving feedback to the government is supposedly the election? Well, in November, they can pull the lever for Romney, or they can pull the lever for Obama, both of whom have nearly identical agendas when it comes to law enforcement, the war on terrorism, civil liberties. Or they could vote for a third party that has very little impact, or they could stay at home. So what really needs to happen is the American people need to just stand up against the drug war in ways that they stood up against alcohol prohibition and past instances of oppressive measures that were derailed by the people. One way that they did it was on juries. They just refused to convict people who were up for these nonviolent crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And people just need to pull the plug on their support for this, the whole system. And they should stop supporting it. They should stop, you know. It always strikes me as quite something to see a car in Berkeley with a peace symbol next to an Obama bumper sticker.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's a start. If you support peace, stop supporting the guy who's gone to war with five countries. If you support a peace in the drug war, stop waving the banner of the biggest drug warrior in presidential history.
And is that now the biggest drug war era in presidential history?
Well, yeah, in the sense that the drug war escalates every time. I mean, well, if Romney becomes president, he'll likely be the biggest drug warrior because he'll be after Obama.
Right.
But Obama has, in fact, accelerated elements of the drug war more than Bush did. He revitalized these programs that Clinton had in place. In fact, part of his stimulus program in 2009 was increased funding for the drug war.
Oh.
So, and of course, the medical marijuana raids, the strong arming of Mexico. I mean, the difference between what we've had under Bush and Obama is smaller than, say, what Reagan did to ratchet up the drug war. But in absolute terms, the drug war is bigger than ever.
Well, I want to ask, you mentioned something about history, and we love to talk about history on this show. How was prohibition against alcohol finally ended? What did people do? Were there demonstrations out in the streets? I frankly don't know, and I'm hoping you have some knowledge of that history.
Well, one thing was there was civil disobedience. One reason it ended so quickly was because alcohol was an integral part of American culture.
Right.
And, you know, the alcohol prohibition only lasted about a dozen years because people just, Americans just kept drinking in huge amounts. Then in Chicago alone, there were something like 5,000 speakeasies associated with Al Capone. They just couldn't control it. And so one thing was people just kept drinking.
Right.
And enough Americans had memories of drinking that it was hard to sustain. Another thing that happened was there a lot of the prohibitionists, a lot of the big supporters of alcohol prohibition, which finally was enacted in the culmination of many years of agitation.
I mean, right. Many.
The temperance movement was one of the biggest political movements of the 19th century.
Yes.
World War I allowed for alcohol prohibition to gain a new footing because of the demonization of Germans and their beer, as well as the debauchery on military bases and the drunkenness, which reminded Americans of the dangers and perils of alcohol. It all intensified, and they finally pushed through alcohol prohibition, but a lot of the very people who were behind prohibition ended up seeing that prohibition exacerbated all of the problems that they associated with alcohol. And so one thing that helped was by the late 20s, a lot of the former proponents of alcohol prohibition became outspoken opponents of alcohol prohibition. So that helped. One problem with the drug war is that we've had marijuana prohibition since the 30s. We've had heroin and cocaine prohibition since 1914. We've had a full-fledged, militarized drug war for 30 years. And so Americans don't have nearly the memory that they once did of these products being legal. I mean, there was a time in American history when you could go to the store and you could buy heroin.
Mm.
You could a child could go to the store, buy measured doses of heroin without so much as a note from her parents or doctor.
Yes.
And it wasn't really associated with any kind of major problem because, you know, there's always been some drug problem. But the drug problem exists whether or not drugs are illegal. But making drugs illegal makes everything worse. And so Americans don't remember this, whereas in the late 20s and early 30s, Americans remembered distinctively that alcohol used to be legal, right? So I think that's one reason it ended It was very dramatic also when they outlawed alcohol. They changed the Constitution, you know.
Yes.
Back then, Americans saw something as dramatic as prohibiting alcohol as being a major diversion from policy tendencies before. Americans were philosophically more reluctant to see such huge structural changes in the government without acknowledging them in the Constitution. So they said, we have to change the Constitution. There's no federal power to outlaw alcohol, so we're going to change the Constitution to give the feds that power. But by the time the drug war was fully underway, they didn't ever really change the Constitution anymore. They just ignored it. And so this, what we'd have is one drug after another became illegal. Throughout the 60s, they started targeting the psychedelics. By 1970, they had the Controlled Substance Act, which tried to, you know, aggregate all of this. And they created the schedule system under the FDA.
Right.
And it's been this more gradual ratcheting up. And so I fear that the parallels with alcohol prohibition are rather tenuous
right.
when it comes to our prospects for ending it.
Right, because alcohol, as you say, was easy to remember, and people knew it was part, an integral part of who we were as Americans, our identity, whereas marijuana has not been, except for us baby boomers. Again, we're talking with Anthony Gregory of the Independent Institute about, are there signs that it's the beginning of the end of the war on drugs? Now, one of the things that made me think it would be good to talk about this is because of Governor Cuomo of the state of New York. He has proposed, and I think this is a big change, that to decriminalize open, not, you know, in your house, but actual open possession of up to an ounce or so of marijuana, 25 grams. This is Governor Cuomo of the state of New York. Will it actually happen as is? I don't know. But the fact that he has proposed that you can openly possess up to an ounce of marijuana, that's a big deal. That's, I would think, a big domino that may be in the favor of sanity. What's your sense of what Governor, Andrew Cuomo is talking about?
Well, again, I think it reflects this just recognition that the drug war, and especially with marijuana, is not sustainable. It's not in line with what people want. And so, you know, I'm glad to see any reform that moves us in the right direction proposed and enacted. I don't know. I don't usually make predictions about how things will fall. You know, I used to think that California would be one of the more liberal states on marijuana, but recent polls indicate that California voters are less in favor of legalizing marijuana than the country at large.
Really? That surprises me too, yeah. Huh.
So, in New York, I don't know. I mean,
well, there's New York City, and then there's the rest of the state of New York. He's talking about New York City mostly. But you have said, and I think this is an interesting point, you know, the terms liberal and conservative, what the heck do they mean? Liberals often call themselves progressives these days. And you say, I think it's an interesting quote, paternalistic progressivism has kept the drug war going. And that's one thing a lot of the country during the American Civil War felt about the Northerners, the Yankees, had this, were very paternalistic. We know what's best. We want to impose our morality on the rest of you guys. So I wonder if you could explain what you mean by paternalistic progressivism has kept the drug war going.
Well, I think that conservatives,
real conservatives,
as conventionally defined,
right,
do favor the drug war.
Huh.
I think that, unfortunately, most liberals or progressives do as well. I mean, I think that on the left, you see a little bit more thoughtfulness on some of these issues, on curbing some of the abuses. But historically, Democrats, who to this day are revered for their place in the progressive pantheon, were the great champions of drug regulation and control.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Teddy Roosevelt. He wasn't a Democrat, but he was a progressive. And Woodrow Wilson was a Democrat and a progressive.
Right.
FDR is like the most revered Democrat progressive of all.
Absolutely.
He was the one who outlawed pot.
Yep.
So,
under pressure from senators from the El Norte area of the country, being a way to arrest and harass Mexicans. So he was under pressure from those senators. I give the guy a little credit. But anyway, what about?
He certainly gave into the pressure rather happily. Yeah.
He did.
I don't think of him as a victim of history. I mean, this is the guy that rounded up the Japanese Americans. And brought nuclear warfare into the world by creating the Manhattan Project. And,
yes, indeed.
I mean, he was.
Well, he did some good things, too. He did. I mean, there's a lot to criticize FDR on, not protecting Spain from the fascists in the Spanish Civil War. Many, many things, the lynching law. But, I wonder where the pressure is going to come from to legalize it or to at least decriminalize it. I wonder how much pressure from Mexico and Latin American countries. There's been these incredible bloody drug wars in Mexico. What about pressure from the government in Mexico? They must see that it's all because of demand from the United States. I mean, thousands of innocent civilians are being slaughtered out of this. I wonder, what do you know about pressure from Mexico and other Central American nations that may possibly be making a difference? Or do we just plain not care about all the deaths down there?
Well, Americans, certainly American leaders, I don't think care about foreign deaths. The U.S. Empire is, I think, to some non-trivial degree, sees foreigners as not quite.
They're the other.
They're not. Yeah, right. The other.
Right.
The Mexican government, for a while now, has openly disapproved the drug war and wanted to end the war on drugs, as has much of the rest of Latin America. But these governments are still, to a degree, beholden to the U.S. government. So I don't know if that's really going to be what does it. I think, ironically, we have more chance of the drug war ending with marijuana, let's say, under a Republican administration, for one thing, because Republicans can get away with liberal policies better than Democrats can, because of that's how politics.
God, you're so right.
I think Democrats can get away with conservative policies. I think if George W. Bush, if his attorney general had said that the president has the authority to kill an American citizen on his say-so alone, I think there would have been a bit of outrage.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Today, there's very little. I mean, people don't like it, but I think, and on the other hand, when Bush wanted to push Medicare expansion, No Child Left Behind, everything he did domestically just kind of was enacted without any sort of fanfare. It just happened. Whereas every time Obama wants to do something on the domestic scene in legislation, there's at least this big debate. So I think that an irony of politics is that civil liberties, although both sides are in power, are horrible on civil liberties. I think with things especially like the drug war, the political dynamics are such that a Democrat is probably never going to touch it.
Yeah.
I think that what would have to happen is the public would have to keep turning on it. Americans would have to not just oppose marijuana prohibition, but oppose it vehemently and vocally and demand that it end. And I think one thing that's going to have to happen is states are going to have to just legalize it. You see, the way that medical marijuana has gone down is that the state started legalizing it. California just did it. Even though it's illegal under federal law, marijuana is a Schedule I substance with no medicinal value.
Right.
California said, we don't care. We're legalizing it. There were raids. It went to the Supreme Court in 2005. The highest court in the land said, nope, California's medical marijuana laws are invalidated by federal law.
Right.
And California basically said, we don't care.
Right.
We're just going to keep doing it. And you can keep raiding us, but we'll keep doing it. And in this, this is what, this is nullification.
Uh-huh.
This is the policy where a state stands between, it's very rare, it's only happened a few times in American history, sometimes over tariffs, sometimes over the Alien and Sedition Act, where there's been a threat of the state actually defending its people against the federal government. But this is a case where it's actually worked to some extent, where the state of California and other states have said, we don't care, we're keeping it legal. And the feds do what they do, and the states do what they do, and public opinion has shifted towards favoring the states. So what I would like to see with marijuana and with drug law in general is for the states to continue liberalizing laws. I want states to just legalize marijuana and not help the feds enforce the law.
And then
it'll come to a head. The feds will get mad at the governors, and there'll be. But that's what needs to happen more so than from above. But I think civil disobedience from the ground up is and the change in culture are going to be what finally brings the drug war down.
Fascinating. Well, I have to ask too. There are those who concern. Well, we know tobacco causes cancer. That's from smoking. We haven't made tobacco illegal, but what about smoking marijuana and cancer? What's known about that? I got to ask about that.
There's some anti-carcinogenic properties of cannabis, and from what I've read of these studies, it's a little bit. I wouldn't want to take a hardline position one way or the other. It appears to me that marijuana is for most users far less dangerous on this than cigarettes. But surely it's not completely benign for your lungs. I mean, people are smoking smoke. Burning plant matter is not something your lungs really want. So I'd say that one positive development in the medical marijuana community has been the use of vaporizers and edibles, where people bake the marijuana. They cook it into the oil and they bake it and they eat it.
Yeah.
And in fact, a lot of medical marijuana users don't smoke it. They either inhale it through a vaporizer, which is far less damaging to the lungs, or they eat it.
Right.
And
it's measurable too. Yeah.
So I'd say that's a positive development. And again, people don't need as much marijuana to get the effects of cigarettes. People smoke them all day, but ultimately, I would take the position that even if these things are terrible for people, people have a right to use them. You know, I don't
That's a good point.
I argue the science of marijuana compared to these other drugs, but I think all drugs people have a right to use. People should own their bodies. The government, either you own your body or the government owns your body. And for the government to claim that you can't ingest marijuana or cocaine or trans fats or Coca-Cola is, it should make every American just shake with anger and hostility at these people in Washington and in their state governments who would dare to claim that kind of ownership rights over people's bodies.
Yeah, we've seen governments like that, and we fought wars against governments like that. Anthony Gregory, one last question. How close do you think we are to the tipping point where it just happens? You know, I feel like that something is changing. This may be the beginning of the end of marijuana prohibition. What's your sense? Any sense of how close we are to that tipping point?
I don't know. I'd like to say we're close, but I think many pot reformers have thought we were close for many years at other times, and the I don't like to make predictions like that. The government loves its drug war.
That's for sure.
Loves the power that it gets from it. And until people turn against the government in a more fundamental way than we see in politics today, people question the very premises of the modern state and its control over people and their communities. Until that happens, I wouldn't want to be hold out my hopes too much, but I do have some hope.
Well, and I'm tending to see that happen on a number of different issues, the Occupy Wall Street, the pro-choice, various different issues about, hey, you know, does this government work for us or for, you know, the interests on Wall Street? Anthony Gregory, very, very educational, very interesting program. Thank you so much for being with us. If people want to follow what you're doing at the Independent Institute, I'm guessing there's a website to which you can point people.
Sure, independent.org. Encourage you to go.
Interesting. Easy enough. Well, thanks very much for being with us on the Burt Cohen Show today. And as you say, it certainly is all about freedom. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Burt. It's been great.
My life, so I bought my lid. Even messing with my children, and you're screaming at my wife, and get off of my bed if you want to get out of here alive.
Freedom,
freedom, that's what I want now. Freedom, that's what I need now. Girlfriend, you know the drugstore man.